Hey folks, welcome back to the Field and Garden Podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Mason Ziegler of the Gardener's Workshop, and I am glad you have decided to join me here today. And we have a great subject matter today, how and when to rest and recharge. And this is a replay of a conversation I hosted over on Clubhouse. And it's just really, really timely this time of the year. We're heading into my rest and recharge time. And it's not quite what a lot of people think it is. It's not about me, you know, vacationing the whole time, or it is really about how this is super beneficial to your business. So if you have never, if you'd like to join one of these conversations that I have each week over on Clubhouse, I call it the Flower Farmer Show. It happens on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and it lasts about 30 to 45 minutes, depending on the questions. And I give a little talk for about 15 or 20 minutes, and then we have a time of Q&A. And I would love to have you join me over there. Clubhouse is just a phone app you download on your phone. It's an audio social media platform, so we just hear each other. We're talking like we're talking on a telephone. It's really pretty awesome. So I'd love to have you join me over there. So this subject today of resting and recharging, I think people totally undervalue that. And so let's take a listen to what I chatted about this day. Hi, Jesse.
Hi, Lisa. How you doing?
I am good. Welcome, everybody, to the Flower Farmer Show today. And we have a really great subject that I think is often not thought about, that I look forward to talking with you guys. And so before we get started, my name is Lisa Mason Ziegler, if we've never met before. And I'm joined here with one of my team members, Jesse Graven, and she is here to facilitate, to be sure that if you have a question you'd like to ask, that she's going to explain to us how you can do that. And Jesse, tell us how they can join in.
Yeah, thanks, Lisa. Hi, everybody. I am Jesse Graven, and I work as an admin role here with Lisa on her weekly chats. And I wanted to first let everybody know that if you want to be reminded of when Lisa schedules a chat, you can join the flower farming group that she has here on Clubhouse. If you look at the top of the screen there, it says flower farming and there's a greenhouse. If you tap on that, you can join the club. And then when she schedules a new chat, you'll be notified, and it'll give you the option to add that to your calendar as well if you'd like. So another thing that you can do if you are connected to some folks on Clubhouse here that you think would like to be a part of this discussion, you can ping them into the group. And the way that you would do that is by tapping the plus button at the bottom of the screen, and that'll pull up their names and images, and you can just tap on anyone that you would like to invite to the discussion. And so then we have two different ways that Lisa can take questions. And the first one is the traditional raising your hand button, where you would come up to the stage and ask your question. And you can do that with the little hand raise tab at the bottom there, and that lets Lisa know that you'd like to come up. And we love for you to do that. But if that doesn't work for you for whatever reason, you can also use the back channel feature here on Clubhouse. And you would do that by clicking the little paper airplane icon that's at the bottom of your screen there. And that takes you to a separate page where you can put in my name, and you should see my same photo here. And you can send me your question via text, and then I can ask it on your behalf. So we're happy to take questions either way. And I hope that this will be a nice, lively discussion. It's a big topic, so I'm anxious to get started. Thanks.
Thanks, Jesse. And I do want to encourage folks to ask questions. We just really love that. So today, the title of this little chat is Rest for the Garden, Mulching, Cover Cropping, and Habitat. And I really think that a lot of times folks don't really consider that our gardens need rest too, right? And it doesn't just mean walk away and just leave a mess of weeds out there, or to not worry about trying to prevent weeds from perhaps growing in the winter. I think back to when I first started farming, and you know, I mean, I really knew nothing about weed prevention back then. I was just killing myself weeding all the time, and I just never got ahead. And one of the things that would happen to me, I don't know if this happens to you, but at the end of the season, I was so blooming exhausted and tired that there was always a part of my garden, and it used to really be a lot of my garden, I would just say, oh, I'm just leaving it. I'll clean that up in the spring or whenever. And, you know, that it just does not have to be that way. There are things that we can do to not just let our gardens rest, but to actually make their rest more beneficial to us and to the actual garden and those folks that are living in our gardens, right? So I wanted to talk about the three areas that I feel like we really do, we aim to do a really good job with, and that really enhances and helps our garden in a lot of different ways. And so the first thing I want to talk about is mulching. Mulching just means basically that you're covering the surface of the soil. I always thought mulch, I always thought bark. You know, I mean, back when you're a home gardener, that's all you kind of think about, right, is pine straw or bark. But in fact, mulch is really referring to anything that covers the surface of the soil, blocks the light, sometimes moisture, but primarily it's just protecting the surface. And I say this because a lot of people get confused. You know, we use a lot of that Bio 360 biodegradable film in our garden, and it's actually called mulch film because it does the job of mulch. It covers the soil and protects it from the sun getting to it, which is what leads to weeds being sprouting. So mulching has a lot of different cousins, you might say, a lot of different ways to do it. But we, in this time of the year, really try to pay close attention to using a lot of leaves in our garden. And we feel like leaf litter is one of the richest things you can do for your garden. I mean, there's a reason it's often called garden gold. I mean, if you think about the floor of a forest, I mean, a deep forest, right? If you started pawing around down on the ground underneath all those decades of leaves that have fallen there, the soil is just amazing and alive. And that's because leaf litter is made to hit the ground and break down and be digested by those creatures living in the soil. And so we really incorporate a lot of mulching of our fall planted garden beds. We mulch the pathways. We do not mulch the beds with the leaves typically. We use film for that. And it just really creates a really happy and healthy environment out there. So doing that just helps to maintain moisture out in the garden. It keeps the soil it keeps the temperatures from swinging quite so much below the soil also. It kind of insulates that a little bit. But here's the thing that I really am driven to really use leaf litter for is it provides tons of insects for birds and other creatures living in my garden, turtles, frogs, all those guys. There's just lots of insects in there that will be consumed, as well as it becomes home base to a lot of like ground beetles that are so beneficial to our garden. You know, earthworms will come up to the surface of your soil when they've got leaves on top of them. So there's just a really great way. So mulching just really provides food sources for a lot of different members of what we call the beneficial web that lives on our farm. And so we like to always have our soil covered. So if we're not covering the soil with mulch, As I said, the beds that we plant into for cool flowers for fall planting with transplants have film on them typically. We use that biodegradable film with the black side up when we fall plant because the garden beds we feel like really benefit from that black surface. So all winter long, that bed is just getting a smidgen more benefit from the sunshine to heat the soil up. And then because we use hoops and row covers, it really concentrates that. So mulching the pathways just really provides a lot of good stuff for our garden. And then of course that those leaves are not, we don't chop them up. We just use them, bring them home in the bags that we pick up from curbside and dump them. And then walking on those leaves in our pathways next spring and early summer really pulverizes them and further breaks them down. Then the other way that we can really help our garden rest is with cover cropping. And I want to say that cover cropping is not for everybody, meaning it's not everybody can fit it in. And particularly if you're a new flower farmer, don't feel pressured to incorporate cover cropping into your rotation. You've got to figure out succession planting of your cash crops. So it's a little dicey maybe sometimes for some folks to try to incorporate particularly warm season cover crops, the timing. However, most people can find a way to fit cool season hardy annual cover crops, like for instance, the one that I recommend that particularly new growers or people that don't have equipment potentially to incorporate or extinguish it is crimson clover. It's super easy to grow. It's really beneficial. So it's a clover, which means it's a legume, which means that it actually takes nitrogen from the air and puts it into your soil. And it adds nitrogen to your soil. It provides habitat. The blooms are really good for pollinators, and it's easier to manage. We plant it in the fall. It's hardy down to, I think it's negative 10 degrees, 10 degrees below zero. It'll survive. And it just does a great job of protecting and hugging your soil all through the winter. And, you know, again, I think, you know, when I'm out walking in my garden, as I was this morning, we have an amazing stand of cover crop this year. I mean, the clover looks gorgeous. I mean, it's like 10 to 12 inches tall, so full, you cannot see any soil anywhere. And in my mind, I just think of all of the action that is going on below that canopy, whether it's insects, you know, ground beetles walking around and all their friends down there working the soil and doing things to the stuff that's living in the soil. And all you have to do is plant the cover crop, friends. You know, I mean, that will all go on out there without you really having to do something, right? So cover cropping is, it adds nutrients, it'll absorb excess nutrients that are in your garden, provides habitat, and pollinators are particularly thrilled with that come spring. And then the third area that I just wanted to mention, because I feel like so many people think they don't see maybe the direct result of doing this. It's not like this is a cash crop that you're going to plant. But we are really strong believers in surrounding our farm in native, mixed border native plantings. I'm talking about shrubs and trees, and even there's some perennials plugged in there that are all native to my region, which means they support our native insects. And when we have our native insects, guess what that attracts, y'all? Our native birds. Birds don't just eat any insect. I never even thought about that before I learned about natives and learned all of this. You know, there are certain insects that certain species of birds and stuff are drawn to, and that's why you've got to have native plants to have native insects. And when you have that, the native creatures, whether it's birds or reptiles or whatever, those native plants will support what those native creatures need to eat. It's like a chain of reaction. And we know that our native border that surrounds our farm is home base to all of the workers that make it possible for me to farm the way that I farm. We use zero pesticides. We don't even use organic pesticides, and we don't find it necessary. And it's more than just planting a native border. It's kind of a way of gardening and farming, which anybody interested in learning more about that, my book, Vegetables Love Flowers, which is really a book about a three-season cutting garden, really talks about the way that I farm. And it's a big picture, y'all. And the native border provides that home base for these creatures to live. So they have a place where they can rest, where they can hide from their predators, where they can eat, where they can have babies and raise their babies to have more workers in our garden. And all of these things work together. And this time of the year, after we get our working garden mulched and put to bed, we mulch the pathways, we'll put our hoop and row covers. We'll put the row covers in the garden, but we don't put them up until it really starts staying below the mid-20s. We will then start getting leaves and dumping them in our native borders, because those same creatures that I want to live in my big garden need to be living out in our native border too. And particularly a lot of our reptiles and turtles and all those people that live in that permanent area. So there's just a lot of things that we can do to rest our garden while our garden is resting, meaning it's not actively growing a crop for us. There's just some simple steps that we can follow to make that rest time so much more beneficial, just like how it's, there's just certain things that we can do for ourselves to really benefit our rest time. You can do the same thing for your garden. So Jesse, do you have any questions on the back channel yet?
No, I don't have anything on the back channel yet. Just as a reminder for anybody that may have joined us a few minutes late, we do take questions both via the hand raising feature where you would come up to the stage and speak directly to Lisa, or if you're not able to do that, we take the back channel. We take questions on the back channel as well. You can hit that paper airplane icon and type in my name, and I can, if you text me your questions, I can ask them on your behalf.
Thank you, Jesse. So I just want to do a little bit deeper dive on this habitat or this native planting that surrounds our farm. We actually, our native border, I don't know if you follow me on Instagram, I did, and on Facebook, on both of those on different days, I posted some drone footage that actually kind of showed that native border. And you can see the 90 houses that are just outside of my property now. Where all those houses were was there was 40 acres of horse pasture. It was a horse boarding farm next to us just 4 years ago. And so the native border was actually, the first part of it was just planted 4 years ago. And it's really pretty amazing how much it's grown. I mean, we're always sorting images here in the business. We have literally tens of thousands of images, and I'm constantly tagging them. And I just came across some pictures not long ago that showed the native border as we were planting it. And I mean, there was just a fence and all those pastures. And to look at that drone footage that shows the four-year-old native border with now 25-foot trees in it, it's really amazing how quickly it's grown. But what I wanted to share is part of when we knew that development was going to be coming, I hired a native plant landscape designer, and she and I went over and walked the hedgerows that were on that farm. Those hedgerows were 200 years old, and she made a plan for us to mimic those. And one thing I wanted to say to folks is The reason my native border is so mature now is because we bought the most mature plants we could afford. Life is short, y'all. Do not buy little trees. We bought 15-gallon trees, which made about a 12-foot tall tree when it was planted. And it just really has enhanced our life because it's so interesting to see the comments that people are putting on those posts. You know, you would never know that that is right outside of my property, but it's only because of the attention we paid to this habitat, which is really a big part of resting our garden. Do you have a question, Jess?
Yes, I have several actually that just came across.
Okay.
Let's see here. We've got Wendy. She says, would this be much different in hot climates where we rest our gardens from June to August?
No, that's a really great point. So if you live in the South where your summers are pretty unbearable, a lot of people, as she just mentioned, rest their gardens in the heat of the summer. And that would definitely be a great time to figure out if there is a way to plant some kind of warm season cover crop that could actually enhance and protect your soil during that time. But yeah, that's a great time to rest your garden.
Perfect. So I also have one from Charlotte. She says, can you suggest a best use for a mountain of pine sawdust? We have a sawmill.
Oh, wow. You know, sawdust is pretty acidic, I think. You would have to, I mean, I guess you need to marry up with a source of, so sawdust, trying to think what you would mix that with. It definitely has to be mixed with something. And I would think making massive amounts of compost, if you could find a source of whatever ingredient, and that's not my area of expertise, I would definitely, that would be a good search engine phrase, how to compost sawdust, what to mix it with. But you would definitely need that to be processed before you put it into your garden. Because if you, let's just say, if you were to put that in your pathways, your soil is going to really, I'm not sure what leaching would happen with that. And that would be another, that'd be a good question to an extension agent also, perhaps. But I would definitely research that on the search engine. I bet you would come up with some, because there's a lot of people that have that problem. You know, I know that they, I don't know if they still do it. I'm not a horse person either. I know they used to put sawdust and mix that in the bedding of horses, but I have no idea if that's still a good practice or not. So that's all I can offer, I think.
Right. I was going to suggest perhaps the extension agent as well. If there's, you know, more than one sawmill in your area, perhaps they may have some feedback based on that, local need. So let me take another question here. Gabriella, how long after tilling in crimson clover in the spring can the same bed be planted with flower seedlings?
That's a great question. So it really depends on if you extinguish the cover crop at the optimal time. And the optimal time is this. All cover crops, the best time to end their life is when they are at their most beautiful. And that's why most people don't do this when they're supposed to. Like when the crimson clover has just begun to bloom and it's looking beautiful, that's the time that it needs to be either incorporated or extinguished. And this, the reason is that that is when you'll get the maximum benefit from the nitrogen. But even more important than that, that's when the plant is at its peak fleshiness. That means that when it is turned in or cut or whatever you're going to do to it, it is going to break down the fastest. If you allow those plants to continue to mature and go through blooming and just begin to start making seed, those plants get so tough. I mean, it's like the difference between chewing on a piece of beef jerky which would be an old plant, versus filet mignon, which is when they are at the height of their bloom, when you know, that meat just melts on your tongue. It's that big of a difference. So for us in our soil, which I have pretty alive, healthy soil, we can turn crimson clover in and make beds and transplant usually within a week. But if you have heavy soil, that may not be the case for you. But you don't want to have a lot of visible plant debris in your soil when you're making your bed to plant in.
Okay, let's see here. We also have one that says, my hoop cover on my small direct seeded cool season seedlings was ripped off in a storm last night. Is there any hope of them recovering? Looks like most of them have disappeared.
So my first question would be, I would guess if it got ripped off, you're talking about a windstorm. And if you're certain they were there before the windstorm, so oftentimes when we row cover, a lot of times folks don't even look under the covers. So, you know, if you knew that you had seedlings there 3 days ago, let's say, and now they're gone, I don't know if wind could have possibly surely done that, but I would also think of slugs or other predators like that that eat young seedlings. But if you had seedlings and now they're gone, I would guess that they've probably been eaten or the wind whipped them.
Okay, thank you. She did confirm it was a windstorm, so.
Yeah, and wind will really put a hurting on seedlings. So sorry about that.
I've got one that says, I bought my crimson clover but wasn't able to plant it. Now my field is sitting empty. Could I plant it in late winter / early spring and then terminate before my summer annuals need to go in?
That is surely a possibility. I would think that the challenge would be to get the crimson clover to germinate. That would be another I did look this up, but I can't remember it was a while back. What temperature does crimson clover need to sprout? That would be my first piece of work, is to enter that in a search engine and find out what kind of heat it needs. And, you know, I don't know how big an area you're talking about, but if you don't, I mean, I have a lot of row cover. I have been known to cover crop plantings with row cover doing exactly what you're talking about, just trying to concentrate the sunshine and getting stuff to germinate underneath of it. But yeah, that would certainly work. But the challenge is getting it to sprout.
Right. Okay. So then this is actually, I think, just a comment that someone wanted to offer related to the sawdust question. They said that sawdust could be sold to gardeners to store dahlias in. So then I've got another one here. This is Amanda. She says, I'm starting my cut flower farm next year. I've heard so much about how cool flowers do better when planted in fall. This makes me want to pass planting in the spring and perhaps start with cover crops. I want to start up the cut flower farm in the summer, but prep and make the beds this spring. I'm in zone 6B. Which cover crops would you recommend for starting off this way? I still need to get the results back from my soil test, but I'm curious to know what you think.
So tell me again, when does she want to plant the cover crop?
Well, so it looks like she's wanting to plant in the summer. She wants to start a cut flower farm in the summer, but she's hoping to plant in the spring with cover crops. And so I think you may have already kind of answered this question on the last one, but I'll let you go for it.
Sure. And I also asked Amy up and I muted her, so we'll get your question in just a minute, Amy. So yes, the last question I answered would pertain to cool season trying to plant something while it's still cool outside. That's the hard challenge, is getting it to germinate. I don't know that it would be worth it if it's a challenge. And then the other option would be to just wait until after your last spring frost and plant buckwheat. But at that point, you can also start planting warm season stuff. But again, I want to say, you're kind of in the catch 22 now. It's really too late for fall planting. What benefit would a late winter cover crop really be to you? You might just want to go with what you've got and get your compost and get your soils, your beds made in very early spring, or actually in spring, for your first warm season planting. Again, cover cropping is not, you can do a lot of good work with your soil, incorporating compost and organic matter. You know, I didn't even cover crop for the first 10 years. I didn't really know much about it. I experimented and screwed it up really bad, but I added tons of compost just all the time. I was constantly adding compost. And there's a really big benefit to that too. So don't feel like you have to compost. The real benefit don't feel like you have to cover crop. The real benefit also of cover cropping in the fall is to keep winter weeds from growing in your field during the winter, because we have as many winter weeds here as we do summer weeds. A silage tarp might be able to help with that. So there might be other ways to go about that. And so I'm going to ask Amy to unmute herself now and ask her question. And I'm going to invite the next person up. And if you would mute yourself.
Hey, Lisa.
Hi.
I have a question for you about cool flowers. I have planted my cool flowers. They've been in the ground for well over a month. And put Bio360 down. I have row covers over them. However, obviously, it's getting to be winter. I'm in Indiana, right on the edge of Zone 5B, 6A. I'm right even with like Stephen Gretel's farm in Indiana. Okay. And some of them are starting to discolor, especially my Sweet William and my Rudbeckia. They're kind of turning a reddish purpley color. Is that normal as the weather gets cold and then they'll perk back up, or is that a deficiency?
Actually, you know what? That does happen to us too, particularly with Sweet William. And it's a nutrient. I can't remember what nutrient it is that's getting tied up in the soil, but it does correct itself. And in fact, y'all figuring this out, any question I have, I just put in a search engine and you can get the answer. I would put purple foliage on, Sweet William transplants. And I'm pretty sure that I think you're fine. But at least you would know, and maybe your memory will be better than mine. But I did look into that last year. But almost every year, our status, our Sweet William, I've never had Rudbeckia do it that I can think of. So I think you're fine, but I would look that up, and good job.
Okay. And I have another really quick question. Sure. And I know you don't really plant many bulbs, but I planted bulbs with daffodils and tulips. And I have a lot of bare ground, obviously, where those were planted. Am I safe to go ahead and put leaves on top of that, like a leaf mulch for the winter time, and then in the spring rake it back so that the new growth from the bulb can come up, just so that there's not bare ground being frozen over the winter?
Sure. So it is safe to put mulch down of whatever kind you have, leaves, pine straw, whatever, if it's already cold where you are. You don't want to, if you mulch too soon when the soil is still really warm, you don't want to trap that heat. You know what I mean?
Right.
But you do not need to remove that in spring. They'll pop right up through that. I mean, if you put 12 inches down, they might need to remove some. But if you put a 6-inch layer of leaves on top of them, they'll be fine to pop up right through that.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You are so welcome. All right. So Andrew, and I think it's actually Claire who might be here. I'm not sure which one. If you want to unmute yourself and ask your question. And I can see that. Oh, there she is. Hi.
Hello, Lisa.
Is this Andrew?
Yeah, hello, Lisa. Hi, everyone.
Hi, Andrew. Do you have a question for us today?
No, no question. Actually, I just want to be here just to know some
Okay, well, I'm going to move you back to the audience. Thanks for being here and continue listening. Do you have any other questions, Jesse?
I do. I have, let's see here. We've got one from Deborah, and she says, I've taken all your classes. I'm ready for a new one. Anything coming soon?
So I don't know if she's taken Val's class with the Forsen Holiday Bulbs and Beyond, which is, we are hearing nothing but incredible raves about that. And so, yeah, we've got a couple more coming down the pike, but it's going to be a little while, and I've learned not to speak of them until we actually have them ready to launch. So keep your eyes peeled is what I'll say to Deborah.
Right. Okay. So then Ann asks regarding compost, it's getting more and more expensive and harder to find. Is there any way cover cropping will ever replace compost? Is there anything we can do to help mitigate the price of compost?
Sure. So first off, compost, we pay up to $22 a yard for it, and I still buy 8-yard dump truck loads all day long. It is so worthy of that. But yes, that's one reason that especially once you get your garden or your farm bigger and bigger, it becomes more impossible to actually incorporate so much organic matter, whether it's compost or composted manure or leaf mold or whatever, that cover cropping certainly can help to lessen what you may need for that. But each component, whether it's compost made from, where I am, our compost that we buy from the city is basically grass clippings and tree bark that's been chopped up and processed, for weeks and weeks and turned and worked. But then there's also mushroom compost. There's many different ingredients in compost, as well as leaf mold. We find that in cover crops, each one of these different pieces of the big pie bring their own special set of benefits. So I wouldn't say one is better than the other, but surely upping your game on cover cropping can certainly help. To add organic matter and for nutrients and for a lot of those benefits. So for sure. But we consider that, we spend in some years, we've spent as much on compost as we have, on seeds, which is a significant statement. So we just feel like it's that important. If that just eases the pain for you.
Okay. So then I have another one from Gabriella. She says, if the cool season flowers I direct sowed are all hardy in my zone, am I required to hoop and row cover them? I'm in zone 6.
Okay. So good point. That was always my first question is if you're growing cool season hardy annuals that are actually winter hardy in your zone, and then you did everything optimal. You got them planted so that if it's a direct seeded, you got the seeds sown on time so that they could sprout and be of a good size to head into winter. They're in a good spot. It's not a wet spot. What I'm saying is if you've stacked all the carts in the favor of your seedlings, then no, you don't. They are supposed to be winter hardy in your zone. However, we have found that there is great benefit to giving just a little bit more TLC to our transplants that I feel like is one of the reasons that I have been so very successful with cool season hardy annuals. It's like the difference between putting a windbreaker on your child when they go out to the bus stop and it's 55 degrees outside. That's not cold enough to freeze them. But boy, are they so much more comfortable having a windbreaker on, right? And it's the same thing with our plants. The reason that we talk about using row cover so much, particularly during the winter months, once it's gotten cold and staying cold, is that your plants don't have to take all that winter wind. And that constant wind whipping for some plants, whether it's winter hardy or not, the cold's not killing it. It's the plant rocking back and forth and the vegetation just getting all beat up. So no, it is not required. If your plants are healthy and happy as they're heading into winter, which is not always the case for all of us, but if you have a plant that's compromised and it's heading into winter and you hoop and row cover, the hoop and row cover gives it what it needs to recover and to become a better plant. I hope that makes sense.
Yes, I think that does make sense. I'm glad that was a good question for clarification.
Yeah, so. I thought so too.
Yeah. So I think that we have taken care of all of the questions on Back Channel.
Okay, perfect. So I just really appreciate everybody joining us here today. And it really helps us and we love it if you share our conversations. You can go to my profile here in Clubhouse, and those conversations that we have recorded are listed there, and you can actually share them with your friends, and that helps us so very, very much. And I wanted to remind everybody that also earlier on Wednesday at 11:30, I do what's called Ask a Flower Farmer over on Instagram Live. For about 30 minutes, I take people's questions and do my best to answer them, and that's really a lot of fun. And so we really appreciate you guys joining us here. And I also have a closed private Facebook group that is actually named The Flower Farmer Show over on Facebook. And it's really gotten to be several thousand people, and there's a lot of good conversations going on in there. So I invite all of you to join that if your intention is to become a flower farmer or you're already flower farming. We try to stick to flower farming talk over there, and would love to have you guys join us. And if you want to learn more about the Gardener's Workshop, you can visit thegardenersworkshop.com. We are a learning center as well as an online garden shop. We only sell those same tools, seeds, and supplies that I actually use, y'all. You don't have to pull through a lot of different choices. It's just the ones that I use. And we sell seeds in regular packs and jumbo packs for small growers. And I also encourage you to check out my podcast, which is called Field and Garden. So this Saturday, my podcasts come out typically Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. This Saturday, I'm excited about the one coming out. It's called Why I Grow Annuals. And it's I get that question a lot. People don't understand why I don't grow more perennials. And that's what I'm talking about in the podcast this Saturday. So I invite you to check that out. And just thank you so much. And Jesse, I appreciate you being here to help us with this.
It's my pleasure. Thanks, everyone. Good discussion today.
All right. Great, folks. See you again here next Wednesday. Merry Christmas, everybody. Ciao. So I hope that planted some seeds of why it is so important for you to empty your head, to give yourself that chance to rest. And y'all, if you want to be creative, have some more great ideas, it's all about resting and recharging. So during this rest and recharge time, I'll invite you to head over to the Gardener's Workshop. We are an online learning center and garden shop, and our learning center is packed, y'all. It is packed with blogs, videos, podcasts, just lots of great resources to help you. As well as on our online garden shop, we only offer those things that I use, the same tools, seeds, and supplies that I use here on my farm and in my garden, as well as I would love to sign a book for you. And of course, we create and also produce online courses on gardening as well as flower-based businesses, whether it's farming or growing your design business with locally sourced flowers. So friend, we just have a lot of information for you. So it's time to kick back and truly do something for your business that you will consider invaluable once you embrace it. All right, folks, until we meet again, ciao.